Hey, it's Melissa from Melissa in the Morning on WICC 600, and thanks for checking out the podcast right here. If you want, you can always subscribe, share, and like it. Hope to see you guys soon. Thanks. Good morning. It's 8:39. I wanted to bring your attention to something else coming up at the end of this weekend. At the sunset on Monday, that actually marks the start of Rosh Hashanah, and that goes on until Wednesday. I know we do have some Jewish listeners for WICC, but a lot of you have wanted to learn a little bit more about some of the Jewish holidays. I know we have my grandparents who were Jewish, so we grew up celebrating the new year for Rosh Hashanah in our household. But I wanted to take the opportunity to have a rabbi come on and really talk to us about the significance of Rosh Hashanah. So this morning, Rabbi Shlom Landa is here, who was actually with the Chabad of Fairfield. And forgive me, Rabbi, but isn't that on Brookside Drive? Am I correct? Are you guys over there?
That's very good, Melissa. Yes, we are on Brookside Drive.
Okay, that's what I thought. I grew up in Fairfield. So as soon as you said that, I thought, I know where you are. Yes, I know exactly where you are. Well, I'm so glad you're here this morning, Rabbi. Thank you so much for taking the time.
Thank you for having me on.
So talk to us about the significance of Rosh Hashanah.
Sure. Well, Rosh Hashanah is the Jewish New Year. So it runs for 2 days, which begin this year at sundown on Labor Day on Monday, September 6th. And it runs through nightfall on Wednesday, September 8th. And in Jewish tradition, the Jewish New Year, Rosh Hashanah, commemorates the creation of the world. And it marks the beginning of the 10 days of awe between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. And literally it means the head of the year. And the idea is that it blesses the entire year for all people. And a key theme of Rosh Hashanah is really praying for the well-being of all mankind. One of the central observances in Rosh Hashanah is hearing the sounding of the shofar, which is a ram's horn. And again, that's meant to be a sort of a call from the heart. But it's a time of introspection, and it's a time of really, trying to focusing on something beyond ourselves. And it's a beautiful holiday.
Mm-hmm. It really is. It's a beautiful thing. And, Rabbi, a lot of times when people hear, oh, Rosh Hashanah, that's the new year. Why is it 2 days? Because typically people think New Year's, they think it's a night, typically. So why do you celebrate it over 2 days?
That's a great question. So back in biblical times, an interesting thing about the Jewish calendar is it actually runs on the lunar cycle as opposed to the solar cycle. So back in biblical days, we would actually have the Jewish months were actually based on when the new moon was first sighted. And then they would pass word all the way around. So typically most Jewish holidays in Israel are one day, and in more distant places from Israel would be 2 days, because it took time for word of mouth when the new moon had actually been sighted. So we actually, Rosh Hashanah, which is on the first day of the month, it's a 2-day holiday all over the world, including in Israel, because it took time for word to spread that the first sighting of the moon had appeared. So that's why it's 2 days.
Rabbi Landa is here, and we're talking about Rosh Hashanah, which starts the evening of Monday, actually, September 6th, and it is the Jewish New Year. I'm curious, Rabbi, what does it look like? Give us a snapshot. Like, what does the celebration of Rosh Hashanah look like? Are there certain meals, certain things you eat, certain times you pray, you're supposed to go to the synagogue? Like, what does that look like for somebody who's Jewish?
Sure. So one of the key foods that we eat are an apple, which is dipped in honey. Apple, which is round, symbolizes the cycle of life and of the world. And honey, we dip it in honey, symbolize that we should have a sweet year, a year which is filled with goodness and sweetness and all good things. There is, of course, a tradition to go to synagogue and to pray as well. This year, we are actually having the outdoor services at the Fairfield Museum. The main central part of the service is actually, like I mentioned earlier, the blowing of the shofar, which is like a trumpet, which is made of the horn of a kosher animal with the cartilage removed. And that's actually something that you can hear anywhere. It doesn't have to be inside the synagogue, per se. We're actually going to be having an outdoor at Sandcastle Park, right across from Jennings Beach, at 5 o'clock on Tuesday. We're going to be having a service, and everyone is welcome to join, just to come here, hear the sounding of the shofar, even if not comfortable being in close quarters with other people, of course, due to safety precautions. But the idea is that it's, you know, the call of the shofar is sort of a call to repentance, a call to reflect on our year that has passed, and to really, you know, think about the future and resolve to improve during the year that's coming up.
Also, Rabbi, correct me if I'm wrong, but isn't the challah, if people have challah bread, isn't that also a circle in a circle?
Yes.
Isn't that also? Yeah.
Very good. Yes, right. I'm impressed.
Well, I have to confess to you, Rabbi. I feel like I can't lie to you, and I'm on the air, and I feel like I definitely can't lie to you. When we were kids, my grandparents, they always hosted Rosh Hashanah, as I mentioned earlier. They were Jewish, and my brother, oh gosh, he couldn't have been more than 6 or 7, and we were sitting at the table, and my grandmother, you know, they were you know, very much into their religion, which was so beautiful, and my grandmother asked my brother, you know, Nicholas, why is the challah round only on Rosh Hashanah? And he said, well, because the baker messed up. And I'll never forget that. And then from there on, it was like, no, Nicholas, because of the circle, and you know, and it's a year round, and then the sweetness of the honey. So I'll never forget that, that it definitely was not the baker's fault and that it's supposed to be that way. But I was sure it was Rosh Hashanah.
Childhood memories, they stick with us.
They really do. Yeah. Rabbi, last question. Yeah. You said that it ends, the celebration, I should say, it sort of ends leading up to Yom Kippur. Will you just take the time to also explain what Yom Kippur is for our listeners?
Yeah, so Yom Kippur is, it's loosely translated as the Day of Atonement, but it's also, it's a time of introspection. It's a 25-hour fast day that Jews observe. And the idea is really, again, to sort of remove ourselves as much as possible from our day-to-day life and really be able to sort of zero in on who we truly are and on our core essence. You know, you get caught up in daily living and all of the stresses and all of the challenges, the trials and the tribulations, you know, particularly with everything we've been going through the last 18 months. But Yom Kippur is sort of that time that we tap into the core of our soul, and recognize that at our core we are all you know, the soul of each and every one of us is pure and pristine, and if we can only tap into that, that gives us that ability to sort of take that with us through the year ahead, and that's really what Yom Kippur focuses on.
Yeah, I would almost argue that I love Yom Kippur. I happen to enjoy, and not that I enjoy it more, I shouldn't say that, but I think, you know, when you could self-reflect and take all of, you know, even like eating and things like that, you take it away and you really are left with like yourself and sort of looking back. I just think there's something so beautiful about that and so helpful in going into the next year. I always enjoyed that, and I love the fact that you guys recognize that. I think that's a very cool thing. Rabbi Shlom Landa, I appreciate you coming on. Unfortunately, we've run out of time. Remind us again, 5 o'clock Tuesday, you guys are doing a public service. It's going to be near Jennings Beach?
At Sandcastle Park, which is right across the parking lot from Jennings Beach in Fairfield.
Okay.
So anyone who wants to is welcome. It's open to the public. No reservation necessary. And we'd love to have anyone who wants to participate. Sure.
Well, Rabbi, we appreciate you coming on and talking to us about this. A happy new year to you, and thank you so much.
Thank you. May it be a year which is full of sweetness.
Amen to that. I would love to have you back on sometime, Rabbi. Thank you so much.
What's happening in Washington and how it affects you? Melissa in the Morning. Welcome Congressman Jim Himes to WICC 600.
Good morning, Congressman Himes. Thank you so much for being here. How did you guys do with Ida? Are you back in Connecticut?
Good morning, Melissa. I sure am. Yeah, no, and I don't want to make a plea for sympathy because so many people had it so much worse. Yeah, but between midnight and 2 a.m., I was out in my front yard walking around in about a foot of floodwaters.
Yeah.
It was a pretty tough night.
Yeah. Oh, you know, it was brutal, you know, and we're still dealing with just the aftermath of Ida. A lot of communities still underwater and doing a cleanup, and power is not back on for some 1,200 people or so in Connecticut. So, yeah, we're still dealing with a little aftermath, but I'm glad you're doing okay this morning.
Yeah, we were all braced for Hurricane Henri, right, which pretty much left us alone. But son of a gun, I don't want to see the likes of Ida again. And obviously our neighbors down in New Jersey and New York, I mean, my gosh, 45 or something fatalities. I mean, just awful.
Oh, it's horrific. Yeah, it's crazy. And what's insane, too, Congressman Himes, is, you know, I've noticed unless, you know, we are still missing a lot of people, I'm sure. So we'll see. And I'm certainly not sitting here comparing. But it's crazy when you look at the South where it actually hit land. And it was expected to be, and it was really bad. I mean, let's not kid ourselves. It's awful. But right now, they've only got 9 deaths. Not that, again, we're comparing. But, I mean, to see the Northeast, I don't think anyone expected that we were going to have upwards of 45 deaths in the Northeast. It's really pretty unbelievable here. It's crazy.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. I mean, you know, what? One thing, I'm not sure I'd want to expose myself to this, but the folks that live down on the Gulf and in Florida, their communities do get brutally ravaged, yeah. Loss of property. But, you know, they over time, they've sort of figured out that the right thing to do is to really hunker down or to get out of there. You know, obviously this one sort of, I mean, I know that the National Weather Service is issuing very dire warnings. Apparently the first time Connecticut has ever gotten a flash flood emergency warning in history.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, we're not quite as attuned, even though we all went through Sandy and Irene and stuff, we're not quite as attuned as the folks in the Gulf and in Florida.
No, definitely not. And I mean, and we saw it even here in Bridgeport where people unfortunately were panicked for understandable reason, but they were getting in their cars and just, you know, driving. And you know, when you've got washed out roads and you don't know how deep the water is, I mean, we had submerged cars all across Fairfield and New Haven counties. It was scary for sure. And I mean, and unfortunately, you know, we did lose one life here in Connecticut. But it's definitely, like you said, we're more into snowstorms, if you will. We kind of understand snowstorms better, you know? Yeah.
Yeah, you're right. You know, it's worth mentioning, too, the life we lost was of a state trooper who was on duty, you know, doing what our remarkable first responders do every single day, you know, putting themselves at great risk. And, you know, the sergeant, I don't know the full story, but the sergeant was apparently swept away, you know, as he was in his squad car trying to keep us safe. So, yeah, always important to remember what those first responders do for us every single day.
No question. I agree with you. So, Congressman Himes, I did want to get an update because earlier this week, obviously, the big announcement was we did a full withdrawal from Afghanistan. And I know you and I have talked about this a lot on the show, and I certainly am not looking to kind of keep hammering. But obviously, you know, we are on a separate note doing the investigation of like where we dropped the ball. We've talked about that extensively on the show, so we don't need to go back into that. However, I was curious, are there still evacuees left in Afghanistan that need to get out?
Sure there are. You know, we think the vast majority of Americans who wanted to get out are out, but not all of them. Not all of them. We don't know exactly how many. And then, of course, there's a much larger number of Afghans. And as we've talked about before, these are the folks that helped us in our embassy, on our military bases, in many cases served as translators for our troops. You know, even though the evacuation remarkably got whatever the number was, 120,000 people out, there are still many thousands of more that we need to get out. And, you know, now the operation is different, right? We've got just a ton of State Department people working 24/7 to process those applications. I've actually been pestering the State Department and the Department of Homeland Security to accelerate and to streamline the bureaucracy of those applications, which you want. You know, you don't want to compromise the security of the vetting, of course, but, you know, with the more red tape we can cut, the more we can get those people out faster and the safer they will be.
What is the current climate now in Afghanistan? Now that we are totally out, what is sort of like what's happening this morning? I mean, as you can imagine, it's been a very busy news week, but I feel like I read maybe a few days ago. I could be wrong in my timeline, but I feel like I was reading that the Taliban was almost going door to door at this point, taking people out. I don't remember where I read that. I don't remember the context of it. But like, where are we at climate-wise with Afghanistan this morning? Do you know?
Yeah, well, I don't know if I can tell you exactly this morning, but, you know, first of all, the Taliban don't control the country, right? They don't have bits at the north. There are, you know, militias, and, you know, who knows if this is a good thing or bad thing, because here's a country that's been at war for 50 years or something. But, you know, you have resistance developing. You know, the Taliban, so far, I don't think they're going door to door. Now, remember, the Taliban, they're not the United States Marines or the United States Army. This is not a disciplined, well-trained organization with really effective command and control, right? You've got a bunch of, you know, religious leaders, and you've got a bunch of probably 17 and 18-year-olds who are holding an AK-47 for the first time. So in some ways, you know, the Taliban has every interest. Now, who knows what they will be, but they have every interest because we have frozen up their foreign currency reserves. You know, their budget relies, Afghanistan's budget relies, you know, 60-70% on foreign aid. They're going to want to trade. They're going to want, you know, they have a lot of incentives to not be the sort of atrocious people they were 20 years ago. But we have to remember that, you know, again, this is not a disciplined military. So you're going to get, you know, Taliban individuals doing some pretty awful things, which, again, gets us back to why it's so important that we continue to get those people that we need to get out as fast as possible.
Congressman Himes is here, and of course, we're talking about where we're at with Afghanistan this morning. As many of you know, earlier this week, we did do the withdrawal, which is what the president wanted on August 31st. We took everybody out as far as our military was concerned, but reports are saying an estimated maybe 100 to 200 Americans could be still remaining in Afghanistan this morning. The president said, while some of the Americans did choose to stay there, he called the evacuation a huge success. As you mentioned, more than 120,000 Americans did make it out. But I'm just curious, Congressman Himes, I mean, would you call this mission a success? I wouldn't. Not to be like, I'm not trying to poke the bear, but I mean, I think it's a little of a reach to say this was a huge success. I think it was a disaster.
Yeah, well, you know, the answer, like in everything else in life, is somewhere in between. I mean, the fact that our military was able to, in less than 2 weeks, move 120,000 people in the most dangerous spot on Earth out of there, that's a big success. Of course, we lost 13. There's 13 families who might quarrel with the notion that it was a huge success because their sons and daughters aren't coming home. By the way, I mean, and again, you know, if you look at the 20-year span in which we were in Afghanistan, there are a lot of awful decisions over that 20-year period. And, you know, the buck stops with the president. And so his accountability is going to start with why we found ourselves in such a position of chaos. Now, he's not going to be the only one. You know, in our world, Melissa, people look at the world based on what their party affiliation is.
Exactly.
And as a Democrat, I'll be the first to say that Joe Biden bears some responsibility for being president for 9 months and not putting in place the assets and everything to make for a less chaotic withdrawal. But, you know, again, this has been a 20-year thing with President Bush, Barack Obama, and Donald Trump. And each and every one of them bears some responsibility for the fact that, you know, we spent $2 trillion, 2,400 of our fellow Americans' lives. And quite frankly, other than getting Osama bin Laden, which we did in Pakistan, you know, don't have a lot to show for that effort.
Mm-hmm. And Congressman Himes, I know we're running out of time, but do you feel that there's a threat? We're literally not even weeks. We're down to days away from the 20th anniversary of September 11th. We had talked earlier this summer that we were a little nervous about it coming up on the anniversary, and we knew the withdrawal was coming. Do you think that there are any threats that the American government is very aware of or kind of on high alert for this year?
Well, you know, there's a reason why we haven't had a major attack in our homeland for 20 years, since 9/11. And that is that all over the world, our military, the CIA, the NSA are very, very much on alert and every single day are looking at threats. Now, what I can tell you, and I sort of do this day to day as a member of the Intelligence Committee, the United States has been remarkably good at disrupting really big organized efforts like the one that attacked us on 9/11. And so I'm pretty confident that there's not some massive effort that's going to result in thousands of lives lost out there. However, you know, the most powerful country in the world can't do much about, you know, one lunatic with a gun or some explosives. So the point is, you know, I feel like the United States has done a pretty good job over 20 years in counterterrorism, but that does not mean that we can let our guards down. down. And, you know, as they say in New York, each and every one of us is under an obligation. If you see something, say something, because there's, you know, there's always a possibility that some one individual is going to decide to try to make himself famous by doing something really terrible.
Congressman Jim Himes, we always appreciate your time. Thank you so much, and we'll talk again really soon. For my regular listeners, you all know one of the biggest goals I have on this show is to get people more involved with their local elections. So many times we focus on the big elections like president or even governor, but we don't look at the things like the Board of Aldermen, our Board of Education, even our first electmen and women, our mayors even. We don't look at all of these issues at hand and realize that it's really these folks who make it happen for our towns and our cities. So we've been so hyper-focused in this upcoming election year on our mayors, our boards, things like that. And we noticed a couple weeks ago that Ansonia Mayor David Cassetti is now running unopposed. So he's basically slated for another term in office. And I was curious as to why. So I reached out to this man, Gary Farrer Jr., who is the chairman of Ansonia Democratic Town Committee. And Gary is here this morning to kind of tell us what their goal is for this upcoming term. Gary, good morning. Thanks for coming on the show.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
So, Gary, why isn't the Democratic Party putting forward somebody to go up against Mayor Cassetti?
So, ultimately, in the months leading up to our caucus, where we would normally elect or nominate a candidate to run, the DTC in Ansonia, you know, really thought about it. And, you know, Mayor Cassetti, he's a popular individual. He's personable. You know, people like him. You know, we really did not feel that right now would be the best time to run someone against him to oppose him. We felt that our best efforts should be made towards diversifying the Board of Aldermen, since the Board of Aldermen is ultimately one part of those whole checks and balances within city government. We felt that, you know, that should be our main focus right now, to get more people to represent the larger diversity of our great city of Ansonia, and just to bring in more ideas, new ways of looking at things, not just the Board of Aldermen, but the Board of Ed, and you know, that's kind of where our focus is this year. And you know, this isn't uncommon. I mean, have we ran someone in years past? Yes, but. I think it was about maybe around 10 years ago when Della Volpe was mayor of Ansonia. The Republicans didn't run someone against him and focused on Board of Aldermen seats. So, you know, it's one of those things where it's a developing situation. You have to kind of see where your strengths are and where you really need to focus your efforts on what's really the most important thing in that season.
Gary, there were rumors that it was going to be you running as the Democratic candidate. Do you plan to ever run for mayor?
I don't have any plans personally. If anything, I would assume those rumors would probably come from just some practices in the past where if nobody did step up to run for mayor on the candidate's ticket, that the DTC chairman at that time would typically put his name in the race. I personally have no desire. Right now, this year, I'm running for alderman in the first ward. That's really where I want to be. That's where I think I can do the most good. I don't have any desire to run for mayor.
So, Gary, I'm curious, so people can really understand it. The mayor and the Board of Aldermen, I mean, they have to work very closely together to actually get things done, right? I mean, if the board is against something, you could basically shut the mayor's plans down on something, correct?
That is correct, yes. But then it also works in the other way, where if you don't have diversity and different opinions, it just kind of becomes a rubber stamp. And one of the key things that I've been emphasizing to people is that, you know, we're not looking to get on the Board of Aldermen and cause issues. That is not what we're looking to do. You know, that's a political tactic that's reserved more for federal and state government. And when it comes to local politics, it's a completely different machine. I mean, these are neighbors working with friends and family members. You know, we have grown up with people. We, as the Democrats, we want to see the progress that's continuing in Ansonia to continue to go on to the future. You know, we're not looking to stop any progress. All we're looking to do is to just better represent the diverse community of Ansonia. And on top of that, assist with more, you know, newer ideas. When you have a group of individuals, regardless whether it's Democrat or Republicans, because the Republicans' voices concerned years back when the board was all Democrats, and I agree with them then, and I would agree with the situation now. When you have a group of all individuals who are pretty much thinking the same, and you don't really get much new thoughts, new ideas how to do things. You know, problem A may come up, but you may not have the different solutions that someone else might come up with to fix that problem, which may benefit better than the general idea that they've always gone with. So it's, you know, it's about getting that diversity on there to better represent the city and just being able to bring in new, fresh ideas to build on that current progress that's going on, not to stop it.
That makes a lot of sense. We're talking to Gary Ferrer this morning, the chairman of the Ansonia Democratic Town Committee. Gary, if you can hear this, I'm going to replay just a very, very quick snippet. Earlier this week, we had Ansonia Mayor David Cassetti on the show, and his fear of flipping from basically a Republican board to now a Democratic board, as he feels there was a headline he read, I think, in the Valley Independent, saying that if it became Democrats who were running the Board of Aldermen, that you guys would purposely go against him. Here's what he said. I don't want to misquote him. So here's what he said on our show. Take a listen.
And they already made a comment, the other party, that they plan on making trouble for me. I don't know what that means. They've already said they're going to make trouble for me once they get in. And I don't understand what that means, why they would want to make trouble. Things are moving ahead so good in the city of Ansonia. So what kind of trouble are you going to make for me? What did I do? I mean, I only want to do the right thing.
So first of all, is that true? Is that true that the Democratic Party wants to make trouble for Mayor Cassetti?
No, that's not true at all. And I can speak to that personally because I have a good personal relationship with Mr. Cassetti. You know, no one's looking to just make trouble. I mean, I can't speak for everybody who's, you know, ever made a quote about the election. I mean, me personally, I'm not 100% sure where that quote comes from. But I know myself and, you know, other Democrats who are running, that's not the goal at all. Again, you know, I have a good working personal relationship with Mr. Cassetti and many of the other Republicans on the board and at City Hall. I know other current Democratic aldermen or aldermanic candidates feel the exact same way. And it's like what I said earlier, too. I mean, we see that there's progress going on. There's great things that have been happening. We're not looking to stop that. We're just looking to make sure that the checks and balances are there, but to better represent our community. I can guarantee you that, you know, again, with the way local politics works, it's not a simple, he's a Republican, so I'm going to say no on his ideas because I'm a Democrat. In local politics, especially in Ansonia, you look at it and you say, you know what, that is a good idea. It doesn't matter whether I'm a Republican or a Democrat. That's a good idea. Our community needs that. We need to develop our community to be attractive to young people and older people to either stay or come to the city and make, you know, have their families here, visit the downtown area, get jobs into the city. So, you know, we're not looking to cause problems. That, again, that's a tactic for federal and state governments to, you know, to back and forth, you know, with the upper echelons of the party. Again, local politics is not like that. Myself speaking for just myself, I can't speak for everybody who's a Democrat on the ticket, but I know for the vast majority and myself, that is not the issue. We do not want to cause problems. We're not looking to just be a headache or a thorn in the mayor's side. We want to work with the mayor. He's doing good things. We want to continue that with just being more inclusive to the entire city.
So we were just talking about how we want to get, at least in Ansonia, we want to be able to really understand local politics and really understand the importance of voting what you think will be the best thing for your city or town. So, Gary Ferrer, to kind of continue on with our conversation, you were saying we want to build upon what the Ansonia mayor, David Cassetti, has already done. What are some of the goals that the Democratic Party has if, in fact, you are voted in to become the Board of Aldermen?
So, I mean, some of the goals, the key thing, like I echoed before, is, you know, to work with Mayor Cassetti and the rest of the Board of Aldermen, whether it be Republicans, Democrats. I think in an ideal world, I mean, you can see, you know, the board of aldermen split 50-50, so there's not too many Democrats, not too many Republicans. Granted, we'll see what happens this on the this November on what actually happens with that. But I mean, our goal is again to bring in that diversity, to bring in, you know, people from all different corners of Ansonia. Ansonia is roughly 6.2 square miles. You know, we have a Ukrainian Orthodox church down the road from a Catholic church, across the street from a Buddhist temple. Our restaurants downtown hit, you know, corners of the world like Thai, Italian, Polish. We got blue-collar, white-collar individuals. So there's a very vast array of different people who live in Ansonia, in this small little community. And we want to be able to represent that vast difference of people on the Board of Aldermen. We want to continue with the progress. We want to work with the city. We want to assist in keeping taxes low. We want to see education being funded. We want to see Ansonia being a place that people come to live and stay to live. We want to, again, we want to see the schools doing great. We want to see jobs coming in. And we want to assist the current progress that's going on, but bring in new ideas that can help with that progress, not go against it, help that progress. And just, you know, again, bring in the diverse community to be able to be better represented on the Board of Aldermen.
And last question, Gary, because I know you probably have to scoot. Are there certain things that the mayor maybe has missed the boat on or isn't doing enough of that you are hoping, if you get elected, that the Board of Aldermen can kind of, you know, sort of direct him in a different way?
There's different things that I can name off, whether it be specific things that he initiated or did or processes to get there. You know, one of the things I look at it is that, you know, whether I'm a Democrat or Mr. Kasey is a Republican or anybody else in the, you know, who's currently an alderman, running for alderman, anybody, our end goal is the same. We want to see Ansonia do good. I do not believe in my heart that any Republican or any Democrat wants to see bad things happen. We all want to see good things happen. We just all have different ideas of how to get to that end result. I mean, if I were to name something, I'm maybe more public input on things would be, I think, a big help. I know we talk about with the Democrats, we want more transparency. You know, we'd like to see more public input on projects to get just a better understanding of what everybody wants instead of just those that are working directly with it. But again, you know, we all want the same thing. We just have different ways of getting there. So to have that all-inclusiveness with the entire city and new ideas, I think would go a big way on that. Continue the progress.
Gary Farrer, Jr., we thank you so much for coming on, the chairman of Ansonia's Democratic Town Committee. Thank you so much, and we'll probably connect again as we get closer to election season.
Perfect. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely.